This is Hannah-Laura Gabriel interviewing Forrest Miller. Today is April 6, 2004. We're conducting the interview at the interviewer's home, 725 G Street. And Forrest Miller is my neighbor, and he lives at, where do you live?
647 G Street.
Okay. So, well, let's begin. Do you want to tell me where you were born?
McCook, Nebraska.
In what year?
In 1917.
Mm-hmm. And how long did you live there?
6 months.
Yeah. And then?
My folks moved to Loveland. Loveland, Colorado, of course. And that's where I grew up.
Yeah. And what was your family? What kind of occupation did they have?
We were on a truck farm. And, well, Dad was a carpenter, too, in between. But we, there was no end to work on that truck farm. So we didn't get into any trouble.
So where did you go to school?
At a little school, right, a half mile, Lakeview School, country school. Before the time of consolidation, came time to go to high school. I went 1 year, and I still owe them the $35 tuition.
For the 1 year?
For the 1 year.
And why did you not continue?
We couldn't pay it.
Yeah, and why was that? Why couldn't your family have paid at the time?
I guess you might say we were just too poor.
Mm-hmm. And did that have anything to do with the conditions of the time? This was right in the middle of the Depression, was it?
Yes. Uh-huh. That was in 31, 32, long in there. So then I worked on the neighbor's farms and on...
At what age was that?
I was 15 or 16.
Yeah. And how much money did you make then?
Well, sometimes 75 cents a day. And worked up to a dollar a day after a while.
And was that the only work you were doing? Working on other farms?
Yes. At that time, yes.
Did you?
Oh, I helped my dad in the carpentry business.
What kind of carpentry did you do?
All of it. We started in on a house and we built it from top to bottom.
Mm-hmm. And what did you do for fun and play when you were growing up?
Baseball was the thing. Kick the can.
And do you remember anything of your teachers?
My first teacher was my aunt.
What kind of experience was that, to have your aunt as a teacher?
Well, she didn't let me get away with anything, that's for sure. And then I had other teachers. One of them was named Creebill and Gray.
So what were they like?
Pretty good. pretty nice.
What kind of experience was it to go to school in this little school?
At the beginning, rather frightening. But
what made it frightening?
I was a country boy. But I got through it.
So you told a little bit about your dad. You said you did carpentry with him. And tell me something about your mother.
Well, she was busy with 5 kids. She was a nice woman. And she was always working outside in the garden or canning stuff. I don't know whether we'd have had anything to eat if we hadn't grown it on the farm, on the garden farm.
Did you also have chickens or rabbits? And
we had chicken, we had hogs, we had a milk cow. We did all right.
Mm-hmm.
All the essentials.
Mm-hmm.
We had a horse.
Was that your transportation?
No. She was the cultivator puller.
Mm-hmm. And was there a car?
Yes, we had several Model Ts, wore out pop Model Ts, and we didn't have a decent car till I came back from the Navy.
Mm-hmm. And how many brothers and sisters did you have?
2 brothers and 2 sisters.
And did they stay on the farm for while you were growing up, or what were they up to?
No. Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah. One of my sisters married a neighbor, and of course stayed there the rest of her life. The other sister got married and had some kids, naturally. And she had some sort of a drug reaction and died. That's been a long time ago. We never did know what it was, and they couldn't tell us at that time what it was. She didn't make it through that.
So what was good about this kind of life?
Well, didn't know any other. So
so what was bad about it?
So my sister and I were always in trouble one way or another. And we'd go back to the irrigation canal and go skinny dipping and that kind of stuff. and we'd have to come home and work.
What were your chores?
taking care of the hogs and the horse and milking the cow, feeding the chickens, cleaning the chicken house. There was no end to it.
So then, at what age did you leave this, and where did you go from there?
I joined the Navy in 1934.
And you
went to San Diego. Got through boot camp. And then got on the battleship Arizona and was there the rest of that kids' cruise that I was on. I got out when I was 21 and by that time things had changed quite a bit around.
In what way?
Everybody was a little better off. And meantime, my brothers had got to go to high school.
So there was then enough money in the meantime that your parents could pay for your brother's high school?
Well, no, the country school districts consolidated, so they got to go. They could go to high school. No tuition.
Mm-hmm. So, when you were in the Navy, where did you go?
All over the Pacific Ocean.
What kind of experience was that?
Well, lots of water all around. Well, yeah, there were some interesting times in the Navy. I didn't like it at first because I was just a plain old swabby cleaning the deck and all that kind of stuff. But I decided I was going to do something else, so I learned to type and that kind of stuff and got into the supply department. And then went on to... I became a third-class petty officer before I left the ship.
So, and how long was that?
I got out of the Navy in October 38. So, actually, it was almost 4 years that I was in there. They called it a kids' cruise because so young one went in, you know.
And after that?
After that, I went back home and worked as electrician, as a carpenter. On the farm, everything, until
were you making good money doing that?
Oh no! I ran the Rialto Theater in Loveland at $8 a week. I mean, I ran the machines, the pictures and stuff. $8 a week. Well, that was right up there.
Was that good? Was that not enough?
Well, it wasn't really enough. Mm-hmm. But it was, that's just the way wages were then. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember how much money I made as a carpenter, but it wasn't much.
So what were you doing for fun then?
For fun? Oh, duck hunting, pheasant hunting. Didn't really have too much fun. Had a couple of girlfriends in the meantime. They ran off and got married somebody else. And then just before the war, I met my wife, and that was it. That's the way it stayed for 53 years.
And where did she grow up? And what's her name? What is her name?
Her name was Bernice Elliott. And she grew up in northern Colorado, up around Briggsdale. And they did some farming in the valley up there that has become Carter Lake. So their farm got covered up.
And what happened there during the 30s? What happened there during the 30s?
Well, at the point I am right now, it was past the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
We were.
Well, but I'm talking about her earlier experiences. You mentioned before something about the dust storms.
Oh, well, yeah. In the 30s, it was kind of rough. But most of that, I was out in the Navy and I didn't experience it. But my wife did. She had to wear wet cloths over her face in school. I tell you, it piled up the dirt out there over the fence posts. You couldn't even see the fences.
That must have been a rough experience. How long did that go on?
Several years.
How did it... they were farming too, right?
Yes.
So how did it affect the crops?
My father-in-law was a dryland farmer. And, of course, they didn't... It affected the crops all right. It blew them away almost every year. But they did get a crop now and then, and enough to sustain them.
Okay, so then after that, at what point did you come to this area? And what brought you here?
What brought us here? We came to Poncha Springs.
What year, or how old were you then?
Oh, getting real old. That was in 56.
Yeah. What made you come here?
My brother-in-law and some of his friends formed a little corporation and bought the Poncha Springs Lodge.
What kind of a business was that?
Restaurant. And rooms. There was no lack of work there to do either. Oh yeah, we even had a little filling station. And that lasted for 6 years when we went under, you might say. Mm-hmm. There was just no way at that time. The tourist season ended in August. Well, you had the rest of the year to try to make it through. So it didn't pan out at all. It never did pan out. Last guy that owned the lodge had it burned down. But I don't think anybody ever made any money there. Then, of course, we moved into Salida.
First, tell me a little bit more about Poncha Lodge. You were saying that tourists were coming. Were those the tourists, were they the main customers?
Well, no, there were a lot of locals came up there to the restaurant. We put out a full meal for $1.35.
And it must have always smelled yummy, right?
Yeah. I had several good cooks and good waitresses, and some of them are still around.
Mm-hmm. And what was the work like? What were you specifically doing?
Well, everything. All of the maintenance, Once in a while, I even had to wait tables. That was kind of sad. But and I had to manage and order supplies, and we had a little souvenir shop and got it stocked up with stuff. I sold some of it, but didn't make any money.
So it sounds like you were working a lot.
Yes. Yeah, 26 hours a day. Yes.
So what were your first impressions when you came to Poncha Springs of the area?
Well, it looked kind of good. It was a good corner there and everything, you know. And the season had started, and people were stopping by, and it looked pretty good until August, and things just the bottom just dropped out of things. I think I mentioned that before. You had to find things to do the rest of the year.
So, what did you do for the rest of the year?
Oh, we did some building around there and built a fireplace in the dining room, and did it during those slack times in the winter. We built a log house adjacent to the lodge. Really, it was a nice place to live. But it got to where we couldn't pay the bills.
Did you do anything else for income?
No, I don't think so. I had a few moments. I was working around there. Had some neighbors. I'd go do their chores when they went south in the winter. Things like that. That didn't amount to anything.
So what did you think of the area besides the business? What did you think of the area and the people when you first arrived here?
At first it was okay. But Poncha Springs wasn't very much of a town at that time. I was on the city council, city town council at the time. And I think all of the people that were on town council at that time have passed on now. The last one was Mabel. What was her last name? Anyway, just recently she passed away, so that took care of all those people. Let's see. Yeah, I helped Walter Cupps in his furniture factory, make furniture and stuff like
Where
that.
Where was the furniture factory?
It was in behind the what's that hotel out there?
Jackson Hotel?
Jackson Hotel is in behind that. Maybe I'll forget everything pretty soon. Everything will be fine.
So you're mentioning the Jackson Hotel. Was it a big competition then to the Poncho Lodge?
No, not necessarily. We had a better location. We catch all the people coming in from the west and the north. And they really weren't doing a whole lot of business at that time. Had a little fire there. Oh, yeah, I was on the fire department too, because they had a fire there at Jackson Hotel.
What year was that?
That was 59.
Mm-hmm. Did it do a lot of damage?
Not too much there. But we had several fires. I can't remember all the names that were involved. Up around the corner there, across from the substation, that place that's called the, what is it now?
So how was the little gas station doing?
The gas station?
Yeah.
Oh, that was a disaster. Yeah. Yeah. We didn't have too many come in there. And, of course, then it didn't make money. It was called I had a Carter station at that time, which Esso finally took it over. And no matter what I was doing, I had to run out and take care of them too.
So how many people were involved in this business? You said it was your brother and some friends.
Yes.
How many were there involved?
Oh, there must have been half a dozen. Mm-hmm. In that we have formed a little corporation and so forth. And they put the money in and I spent it.
So, since the business didn't make money, these other people must have had other sources of income or capital.
Yeah. Yeah, they were doing all right. Ted Jacobs was a stockholder. And of course, he was doing all right down here at building and loan and stuff. But questions?
Well, after that.
Keep me going.
That's my job. After that, when this business failed, then what did you do?
Moved into Salida.
Why Salida?
Well, we didn't have money enough to move anywhere else. We would have been glad to go somewhere else. But that was it. So we moved into Salida, rented a house, had a great deal to do with the Christian church at that time, you know, all the time that we lived here.
Yeah, specifically what?
In the church?
Yeah.
Almost, I think I held every position in there at one time or other. And finally spent 10 years as treasurer of the church. But then I went to work for Ed Lowry.
And what kind of business was that?
Contracting. We built 3 or 4 houses in town. A lot of other work. I built cabinets for these houses, other houses, in the little workshop just north of Snell Lumber Company. I think that's a pottery place now. But did a lot of work in there.
So during that time, how old were your children about? And tell me the names of your children, how many children you had.
Well, yes, we had our oldest girl, Leona. Married a local man and went to Denver. That was even before I worked for Ed Lowry. Couple of grandchildren from that deal. Danny, the next in line was Danny, and he moved to La Junta and went to work for Nibco, a company that made all kinds of fittings out of copper. And he was there for 17 years. And then would be Anita. Anita, after high school, Anita stayed at home about a year, and then she went off to Phillips University at Enid, Oklahoma. Run on to a guy there. They came back to Loveland and got married. To Salida and got married. They have a little girl who's living here right now. She's in her 30s. Nita Verla. Verla pretty much left home right after high school.
So three children? You had three children? You had three children?
I had, no. We had five children.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be Verla and Lena and Mark. Mark is in Broomfield. He stayed around and worked at different things. He worked for Culligan, so forth at the time. Then he joined the Navy, so that took out 4 years there. And Lena worked over at the hospital in the radiology, moved to Enid, Oklahoma, to St. Mary's. And worked there in radiology.
Where were your children going to school?
Here. Oh, aside from Leona went to Phillips. Well, Anita went to Phillips too. That's where she found her husband.
Phillips, is that a town? I don't know.
Phillips University.
Oh, okay.
In Enid, Oklahoma. There's still a Phillips University, but it is in Tulsa.
Mm-hmm. And when your children were going to school here, which was an elementary school?
Well, started out at the school in Poncha Spring for 1 year, and then consolidation. So then they went Longfellow. High school.
And what kind of schooling was that? What kind of schooling?
Oh, just a regular.
Mm-hmm.
Routine high school, you know. They did all right in high school. Sure did better than I did.
So after you worked for this construction company in Salida, what else did you do?
Well, I worked as a contractor myself for about 3 years, and then worked for Mac Bevington at Monarch Crest on Monarch Pass.
Tell me about that.
For 27 years. Ran the gondola, helped them finish building it, and then ran it, managed it and everything for that long a time. Worked in the wintertime at the ski area until got too much to work at both places, so I came into town and worked for the gas company, Shelf.
While you were working at Monarch, did you, you had a drive-in every day, right?
Oh yeah, we drove up there every morning.
So you went with several people?
Yeah, I'd pick up people on the way up, or drive around town and pick them up, you know. So we'd have a crew by 8 o'clock in the morning up there. That meant getting up a little early.
So how long a work day was that for you and everybody else?
Well, my work days were probably longer than everybody else. I don't remember exactly how long they worked, but, you know, you couldn't work too long without paying overtime. But I was a manager, and I didn't fit in on that. So I worked at least 60 hours every week up there. And that went on for 27 years.
What kind of boss was Mr. Bevington?
Mac was okay. He was really all right. His brother Elmo did the last 3 years, I think I was there, while Elmo bought the tramway from Matt. So I worked for Elmo during those years.
Tell me a little bit more about him.
Him? He had an ego that wouldn't stop, but he done a lot of things around here. Lived up at the Lake Ranch when he was here. Rest of the time in Omaha. Had a brewery there.
So which people, go ahead, you just wanted to say something?
Not sure what I was going to say.
Do you remember any of the people that stand out that you were working with?
I do, but I can't recall the names right now.
Besides working, did you do anything else up there? Have some fun? Did you go skiing yourself?
Oh, no. No, no, no. I picked up too many people with broken legs up there. I wasn't going to break mine.
So what happened to the people with the broken legs?
Well, they brought them down to the patrol office and to the hospital if they had to, and that kind of stuff. There was quite a bit of it. There probably still is. I don't know.
And in the gondolas, what kind of people would use them?
Tourists. We had a good tourist business for a number of years until the rafting business came in. And then they would check with their kids and say, do you want to ride the gondola or do you want to raft on the river? And of course they always chose the rafting. So our business went down. It's still running. Jim Littrell owns it and is still running it. It was also in the hands of the ski area for quite a while after Elmo left.
So in which way is it different now, the Monarch Ski Area, from when it was when you were working there?
Oh, all the difference in the world. First went up there, there was just a rope tow and a... tell me it's quit. And a pommel lift and a lift. T-bar. And that's all there was there. While I was there, while we built two of the lifts, of the newer lifts. The old lift was really something. There was always something wrong with it.
And you were involved in the actual building?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I went back to New York and went through a seminar there on the heron, not the heron, the heron built the gondola. Oh, what's the name of the one that built the lifts at the ski area? Not much help, am I?
You are great help.
It might come to me after a while. I'll let you know.
That's okay. You're doing great. So tell me more about the people who use the gondolas and what kind of, since that's what you did a lot.
Yeah.
And what was that like?
Well, it was kind of fun because there's always somebody new coming in, you know. Well, there were some who lived here who was always bringing their guests up. But there were just people from everywhere, you know, all over. Some from Europe and other places. Most of them just ordinary tourists who came by and happened to see it there, and they stopped and rode the gondola. A nice ride. Could see a long ways from at the top.
And did everything always go smoothly?
No. No, we had problems. We had a lot of lightning problems, which knocked out the power. And we had an auxiliary engine. We had to start up and bring the people down with the auxiliary motor. Or we went up in a jeep along a back road up there and picked them up and brought them down.
Did anybody ever fall out of the gondola?
No. And it's a wonder they didn't, because some people could figure out how to open that door. They'd be coming in the upper terminal there with the door hanging open. It made you wonder.
Did anybody ever get left behind?
Yes.
Well, let's hear about it.
Yes. One night we closed down, the people from on top had come down the hill, and we closed down. We're ready to go home. When a lady came up and she said, "Have you seen my husband?" There he was, sitting up there at our Tower 2, just enjoying the scenery. Never stuck his head out, said anything or done anything. Anyway, we had to start back up again and bring him down, which was lucky. I think that would have been terrible to left somebody up there overnight.
Would have been a cold experience.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Talking of cold, what was it like to work there?
Well, it was always cold up on top. Fairly cold. And then some real cold days, real cold. Snow and that kind of stuff.
But you managed to keep warm?
Yeah. Had to dress warm. I remember some of the new kids that wanted to work up there, and stopped by and get them. And send them back in the house for more clothes. Because I knew they'd freeze to death up there. Well, that's just a...
Did you have any encounters with bears and mountain lions up there?
No mountain lions, but bears, yes. Yes, we did. They kept getting into our trash cans, and... knocking them over, even though we chained them down, they still got into them. They got up on the roof of the lodge, tore off some shingles. What would have happened if one of them had got in there? But we got rid of the barrows by getting rid of the trash cans. As long as there wasn't any garbage, we had a garbage truck. Put everything in the garbage truck, a van, and we just used it as garbage. And of course, they couldn't get in there. And when they couldn't get any food, they kind of went away. Big black ones. Ran onto them a few coming down the hill, going home at night. Didn't actually run into them, but there was one time when somebody did. They ran into this bear. Because they just step beside the road and suddenly just dash across, and if you happen to be driving by, you had a close shave, just like the deer. I had the deer hit me one time right in the side door. And it was a new pickup, too. And had to get that fixed up. You have to just be careful when you're driving.
And for all these, did you say, was it 26 years or 27 years?
27 years.
Yeah, you didn't have an accident in the snow there, and besides the deer?
No. No, I drove up there without any kind of an accident all that time.
Good driver.
And it wasn't a good road either. You know, at times it would be snowy and slick and visibility poor and that kind of stuff.
So, living in Salida, since you first came here, you've lived here for quite a while, what do you feel are the changes? How is Salida different now than when it was when you first came here?
Well, when we first came, it was a railroad town. A lot of people worked for the railroad, and trains going by every day and all day. I like to go down to the railroad yards and watch them, you know, and that kind of stuff. That was kind of fun. Go down there now, you won't see anything. And of course they were bringing in limestone from Monarch Quarry on the train. And then they gather it all together and take it down to where were they? It's Florence, I think, where they made sheetrock. Population was around 5,000 people, and it still isn't that much within the city limits, you know. Maybe it's gone over that by now, but the area around Salida has been built up to where there's quite a few people living here now compared to when we came.
Do you think the people who live here now are different from the people then, 50 years ago?
A lot of retired people have moved to Salida. And I don't think there was too much of that at that time. But now, there's a lot of retired people in here. And they aren't much different than anybody else. Some of them go away and go south in the winter time. And there are the people who've lived here a long time who do the same thing.
So what kind of a place is it to live? What kind of a place is it to live, Salida?
I think it's a wonderful place to live, provided you got a retirement fund and all that kind of stuff. I think it's a little harder to make a living here then and now. Because there's nothing going on except cattle and agriculture. There was more mining when we first came here than there is now. Several mines have been closed down. There's a big floor spar mine above Poncha there, and they went on a strike, so they just closed it. went somewhere else and got their forest plot.
Why don't you tell us about your clock repair?
Well, that was started out as a hobby quite a long time ago. And I repair clocks. I'm not fully equipped, you know, to build parts and that kind of stuff, but it's been fun to repair clocks. It's not as much fun anymore. My fingers don't work very good. And then once in a while I get a clock like Anna Laura's here. It just almost can't be repaired.
But you're having fun with it, right?
Yes.
So you are so multi-talented and capable, and I'm sure with all these questions, I haven't even scratched the surface. What else can you do and did you do? Did you repair anything else, or did you build anything else?
Yes, I repaired sewing machines for a while, which was kind of fun. Anything to keep my head above water, you know, I'd do it. All the work around home has kept me busy for the last few years, and I hardly can do that anymore. But if I happen to get down on the floor, I can't get up. But I think that's fairly common for older people. I hate to say that. Older people. I'm not very talkative this morning.
You're doing great.
I can't bring those any of that stuff to mind. I can't remember a lot of names. That sort of thing.
Well, is there anything else that I should have asked you? Or any good stories that you want to tell?
No, I don't really, and I don't have any bad ones either. But there probably are. There are probably some not bad ones, but there probably are some good stories that I just can't bring to mind right now.
Well, then maybe we're just finished, right?
Well, okay.
I want to thank you so very much. You've been so helpful. on behalf of the Historical Society and the Salida Library, who are sponsoring this project, the Oral History Project. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. We did 65 minutes, so